The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management. This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston.
Welcome to Tube Talk on WRCA.
Happy holiday. While the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true. Happy holiday. Happy holiday. May the calendar keep bringing happy holidays to you.
If you're burdened down with trouble, if your nerves are wearing thin, pack your load down the road and come to holidays.
If the traffic noise affects you like a squeaky violin, kick your cares down the stairs, come to Holiday Inn.
If you can't find someone who will set your heart awhirl, pay a little visit to the home of boy meets girl.
If you're laid up with a breakdown, throw away your vitamins.
Don't get worse.
Grab your nurse and come to Holiday Inn.
Happy holidays.
Happy holiday. Happy holiday. While the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true. Happy holiday. Happy holiday. May the calendar keep ringing happy holiday.
Well, happy holidays, everybody, from Bing and the whole gang at Philco. Mr. Philco, Bing Crosby there, and we've almost made it through another year. The year that Tube Talk appeared on WRCA. Sounds like it could be a poem. Well, good evening. You have reached the zenith of independently produced radio programming for the radio enthusiast. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Paul Burish, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so. So please sit back and relax and enjoy.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow. Mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams. Christmas, if only in my dream.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me.
Very nice version there by Bing Crosby. That was taken from an armed force radio service broadcast during the war. Certainly a sentiment that I'm sure a lot of the boys were sharing with Bing in those days during World War II. Probably listening in on a nice Zenith or some such, maybe something piped in over the ship's public address system. And it was all powered by tubes. Here's Andy.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
When we finally kiss tonight,
how I'll hate going out in the storm. My dear, we're still goodbying, but as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Mr. Andy Williams, and doesn't that sound nice? Nice, soothing and peaceful, sounds of the season. And, you know, kind of bemoan the fact that there's not too much of that stuff left on the radio, especially AM radio. And I'm always struck, even though I don't always get to listen to all my shows as they air on the radio, nice music sounds really quite beautiful, very, very cool to hear it on a nice AM set. And it's something that's just kind of slipping by the boards as everything continues to go digital, everything continues to go to the Bose acoustic wave and downloaded music. And to get that nice tubular sound on a nice set with some music that was well produced is certainly a treat. And it's something we try to bring to you here for 1 hour every Friday evening at 11 p.m. We are here for you, and I certainly hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Mr. Perry Como.
When the days of December are numbered and the earth begs the snowflakes to fall, that's the time of the year that Christmas is here, with peace and goodwill for all. How I love that Christmas feeling. How I treasure its friendly glow. See the way a stranger greets you, just as though you'd met him Christmases ago. Christmas helps you to remember to do what other folks hold dear. What a blessed place the world would be if we had that Christmas feeling all year. Christmas helps you to remember to do what other folks hold dear. What a blessed place the world would be if we had that Christmas feeling.
Oh, so sweet, Perry Como. Well, we're very pleased this evening on Tube Talk on WRCA to have with us Jim Sargent from the Texas Radio and Phonograph Antique Society. You know, I have to confess, Jim, I had internet connections today. I did not get a chance to check out the club website. So give us the official name, because I'm probably going to butcher it. I don't have my notes.
That's okay. It's the Vintage Radio and Phonograph Society.
And that's in Texas, and you folks are right near the Metroplex, from what you were telling me when we talked.
Absolutely. We're actually in the, we call ourselves headquartered in the center of the Metroplex in Irving. But that's just a small town of Dallas Cowboy fame, actually, where the original Texas Stadium was, between the Fort Worth and the Dallas Metroplex.
Yeah, I've been down that way a little bit, and I have some family down that way, too, so I should probably clue them in that you're on, and I don't know if they've ever actually heard the show, but they might get a charge out of hearing somebody who's in their backyard. She's down in Aledo, and then I've got folks in Coleman and in San Antonio and in Abilene. So we're kind of covered all over down there.
Yeah, so, and where I'm at right now, I'm pretty close to Aledo, actually. It's probably as close as they come.
Very good. Well, hey, how long has your club been active? When did you guys get started down there?
You know, Paul, I think we're one of the older clubs around, having started in 1974. In fact, this is we've just completed our 37th year.
Oh, that's great.
So it's been active all that time. No downtimes.
Now, if my memory does serve me correctly here, and you're going to have to be very forgiving here to me, I did check out your site. One of the features that was on there was a show us your set type of thing, where different members could put something up, you know, if they had a prize set. And I did see a couple of neat and interesting sets. Does that get some pretty good interest? Is that a favorite with your members down there?
It is, and we get a lot of interest from people just browsing the website itself, which, by the way, is vrps.org, and we get a lot of hits on it, and that is it's called the Show and Tell link.
Show and Tell, very good.
On the site, and I think the one that's up there right now you may be referring to is a really colorful Admiral radio that David Spivey out of Little
Yes.
Rock.
Yes, who I from Radio Attic fame. I see a lot of his stuff. He has some very interesting stuff, and I think I've seen some very classy looking Crossleys too. He seems to dig up some really good stuff. I'm not quite sure where he gets it all, but I love to look.
Yeah, David's a scrounger, and like I said, he's in the Little Rock area, and And he always seems to come up with some interesting stuff.
That's, you know, one of the reasons that I'm kind of fond of the Radio Attic is, you know, you get a nice feel for stuff all over the country. You know, like David's got his spot on there. But there are folks, you know, I know who are based out on the West Coast, so it's interesting to see some of the models that they find. You know, they have more Packard Bells and Hoffmans, which I guess were manufactured out there. And
sure, more common out there,
yep,
absolutely.
Yep, and, you know, you look back and then you see the stuff back east and you see a little bit more of your RCAs and Philcos. But it's a great site, and it's funny because... No, I saw David's name and I said, "No, this is a familiar name." Well, oh, that's right, you know. So,
yeah.
So now, what do you guys have any special activities coming up with your club, or have you? What's your schedule for the year? Do you have regular meetings and swap meets and flea markets, or what's a typical year for your club?
You know, that's we really do all of those. We meet monthly. We don't have any downtime. We try to do something monthly. We believe, I guess, in engaging the membership and. And if we don't have downtimes when we meet pretty regularly, then you're going to get people involved, and you're going to keep them active in the hobby. And the, you know, I have the schedule for the first 3 months. Our program director is actually a guy named Mike Grimes, who's been active in our club for a long time. But Mike continues to come up with some neat topics. We're going to be looking in January, and we meet on the third Saturday, by the way, of every month. Doing something. We're on the third Saturday. But Mike has put together a program in January where we're going to look at a video of John Terry's museum and his collection.
Very nice. Yep. John Terry, a local guy up here, and he's in semi-retirement now.
Yeah.
And excuse me, but just I have to plug my own club here. He's gone into semi-retirement, but he's still been very cooperative with our club up here in New England. And the New England club is going to run. It's actually sort of affectionately referred to as the John Terry Show. We have a show up here in February, just around Valentine's Day, that John was putting on when he was with Antique Radio Classified religiously.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of our best events. And with him kind of taking, you know, things a little bit easier, there was some question as to whether that would continue. So we're going to try to pick up the ball and run with that a little bit. But we'll see how we do, and hopefully we won't have any February weather surprises either. Where do you folks actually meet, Jim? Do you have a central locale or a regular club meeting place?
We actually meet in Irving.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, where we call our headquarters area. It's where our post office box is at. So we have basically two meeting buildings in that city, both within spitting distance of each other, that we do our meetings. And one has got a large parking lot, so we like to use it when we have our outdoor swap meets, which we do twice a year in the May and then the September time frame. And then we also have an auction that we do there in March. We do what we call our spring auction, which is a good time for people to clean out stuff that accumulated over the winter.
Yep, a little spring cleaning.
And, yeah, absolutely. And then pick up some items, some parts, and whatever they need. And the swap meets, the regular meetings, and the auction, those are all held at our two locations right there in Irving, Texas.
And about how many folks do you have on your regular mailing list? How many members these days?
You know, we're bumping up to 300.
Very good.
Normal enrollment. It's like most clubs, though. It fluctuates, but usually not more than plus or minus maybe 15. So 85 to 315 in that range would be our current membership.
But we got six states up here in the New England Club, and I think we're about 250, and it takes us we got to cover six states to get that many. But then again, you do have the luxury of having a little bigger state.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting. There are three organizations, at least three, in Texas. I actually think there's one up in the northwest part of Texas, but the Houston Club and the San Antonio organization and ours make up the majority of the radio collectors that are in clubs in the state of Texas, and ours being in the north part where the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex is, we're lucky that we gain membership and have active members that are in 150 to 200 mile range of here from Arkansas and Oklahoma and Louisiana, and then south to San Antonio, Houston. So we draw a pretty good membership and a variety of folks from here.
Well, that's great to hear. And, you know, one of the reasons I try to reach out periodically to folks with different clubs is that, you know, there's this feeling I think sometimes, you know, I'll, you know, especially on my own, you know, I have a few friends who are closer to me, and we'll talk about our collections and what's going wrong and what blew up and what did you find. And but sometimes you get the feel you're a little isolated. It's not a very big hobby. Then you'll go to the swap meet, you know, and you maybe see a couple hundred other guys and gals, and you say, well, you know, how many people really do this? But, you know, you start talking to folks from Texas and from California, and I talk to the folks down in New Jersey, and Mark Oppitz up with the Michigan Antique Radio Club, and you start to get an idea that, you know, this really is a pretty good-sized hobby nationwide, and it's, you know, don't feel as if, you know, you're just a little eccentric with your collection down in the basement, tuning, you know, still listening to AM. There's a lot of us out there.
Yeah, and I would agree. And as I occasionally will post some information on a website like auctionzip.com about some radios or an auction coming up or something like that, and you'll be just—it's astounding how many hits that site will get from people that are looking at antique radio. So it's not a dead hobby, and it's very active. And the while the membership may be getting older, I think mm-hmm. we're starting to garner some of the younger folks as well. And that's really where we're trying to do some focusing.
Well, I know the my pals down in New Jersey have a little segment of their club there at this. It's a media museum, I guess you could call it, for lack of a better term. It's called InfoAge, and they really do a lot of outreach, which is, you know, it's great. I encourage that. Yesterday I was actually at my son's elementary school, and talk about getting a new respect for teachers. I was down there from 8 in the morning, and I didn't stop talking until about 1:15 in the afternoon.
Wow.
I did a bunch of kids, and gave them a little chat about the history of radio, and we talked about who's Marconi and who's David Sarnoff and what's a Philco, what's a Zenith, and then we played a little old-time radio with some Christmas themes to it, and they seemed to enjoy that. But it's interesting, you know, as I try to give them a couple of different options to say, you know, there's a technology side of this, and then there's actually the collecting the radios itself, which just some people love the hunt and to build their collections and to have a model from every manufacturer. And then plus, you know, try to give them a feel for, well, what were people really listening to on these sets? And I think they enjoy the radio plays. You know, they like the old-time radio. It was fun to watch them sort of just sit quiet and listen. Some of them closed their eyes, which was pretty good. But we'll see. Maybe I hooked a couple. I don't know. We'll have to see how that all pans out. So
it's interesting you talk about the radio programs and engaging the younger generation with this. There, I found out recently there's an iPhone app on old radio programs.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, it's really kind of neat, and it's portable, and it, you know, it's something that anyone can get engaged in. So it's kind of neat to apply the old radio programs to the new technology as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, because I know there are a bunch of folks who will have a little low power AM station in their home. You know, their sort of their home hotspot. And, you know, they'll play old-time radio, they'll play the big band music, and they'll play programs that, you know, they were fond of, whether it was even like, I think it was CBS Radio Mystery Theater, or whether it's, you know, the old Inner Sanctums and Lights Out and Bing Crosby shows. And, you know, you get that nice flavor of it. And the other nice thing, too, is it's a good test for your radio because, you know, there's just so much news and talk now, especially on AM, that it is nice to listen to some different content. So, It's nice that it's showing up on mobile apps now. We're covering everything. And, you know, it's also, I guess, a good comment on the health of the hobby, because that stuff wouldn't be coming out if somebody wasn't using it, somebody wasn't going to listen to it. So, you know, that's good news. And I guess another interesting little pulse, we talked about David Spivey in the Radio Attic. I periodically check in. Steve Adams, who's the proprietor of the Attic, is a Massachusetts guy, so I've talked to him from time to time, but he always posts up, you know, how many radios they've sold this year. Now we're almost at the end of the year. They've sold over 1,100 on that one site with all their different vendors, so you know, maybe the hobby's a little healthier than I give it credit for sometimes, because it's easier to get down on it. So,
and I've talked to a couple of the folks that actually post on that site, and they are telling me they've had a really good year.
Well, that's
so
good news.
I agree. Maybe you know, things are not as as doom and gloom in some places,
sure,
as we hear.
Especially with the economy. So
yeah,
that's good,
exactly,
news. Now, how did you, Jim, get interested in radio and collecting vintage radio yourself? Tell us a little bit about your angle on the hobby.
Yeah, mine comes, I guess, from my early youth. I actually was fortunate enough to run into a ham operator back when I was a young teenager, around the age of 14, and he took an interest in me, and he had a son, and we grew up together, and both got our ham license, and the bug of electronics, I guess, was really spurred there. But I'm after I got out of the military, I started looking for hobbies, and one of the things that really caught my interest in an antique shop was some antique radios, some old radios, and it I after tearing a few of them up, I realized I could actually put them back together and make them do what they were supposed to do, and it was all self-taught. But you mentioned earlier, you know, the teaching that comes with from one collector talking to another. So I did a lot of that. I learned a lot by listening, and I'm, you know, now I try to pass that on to other folks that that want to repair and collect and restore their own radios. So my hobby, you know, started basically as a youth, and it's progressed, and I've been seriously collecting since the mid 70s for sure, and so it's just it's a hobby that I've never really wavered from after I started looking for old radios.
Now, can you give us a guesstimate how many are in your collection these days? Do you got a number?
Yeah, I almost embarrassingly, I used to be able to say over 1,000. Now,
wow.
Probably in the 500 to 600 range.
Well, you know, that's very, very comforting, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who get a lot of heat and they don't even have 50 radios hanging around the house. So, how do you have some space in a warehouse that your wife doesn't know about or something? I don't know.
Yeah, actually, I've got a very understanding wife.
Very good.
And that helps. And I do have actually a couple of little storage buildings. I call them little. Some people would call them large. And then I built a small building on my property, and so they're scattered around the property and the home. And but everything I show, I try to make so that it actually works. And when people ask,
"Very good,"
work, well, sure, here it is.
Yeah, that's always a kind of a treat. You know, they're surprised. You know, it looks nice, but they say, "Does that really play?" And then you kind of catch them. You know, it's fun. It's great for conversation. Now, do you have favorite type of radio or manufacturer? I mean, do you like broadband, multiband stuff, or are you just you know, standard broadcast, or you like Philco's over Zeniths, or Zeniths over RCA's, or you just like to have a little bit of everything?
You know, I think my preference, and it has been for years, is the earlier items, the 1-2 and 3-tube type sets.
Yep, the real early popular stuff.
Yeah, the early, the 20, 21, 22 vintage. That's where I seem to focus these days. I have, you know, I've been through the phases where I really love cathedrals, and I still have a lot of them. Consoles are like most people. You know, I've got a half dozen, but that takes up a whole lot of space. I like early radios. I like radios, period. The earlier ones, the ones I care for, the ones that my wife likes to look at and talk about, would be the colorful and the Bakelites and
sure,
the ones that are more representative of her taste.
Well, you know, you really got to get up to Boston area, then you got to go out to see John Terry's barn, I guess you could call it. He has quite the museum out there, but he definitely has a focus on that very early stuff. And a lot of the stuff, I kind of scratch my head and is that a radio? You know,
that is actually on my bucket list to do. And John's actually from the Texas area, and has been down to our
excellent
organization and our convention several times in years past.
Super. Well, you come up. You can come up. You can sit in studio with me sometime if you come up to Boston. So
I'd
glad
like
to have
that.
You on. Now, you also have a little auction business that you do as well. So that's something I'm sure the audience would like to hear about. How's that going? And how did you get into it? And do you have a lot of business? I mean, are you selling off estates or collections, or is it stuff that you auction off for other collectors who are still with us?
You know, I do a little bit of everything, I guess. I started doing auctions for the radio club because we had an auctioneer, but he needed a break every once in a while, and
sure.
I paid attention to what he was doing. And in the probably the early to mid 80s, and then I sort of got good enough where I thought I could go on my own. And went to school. Yeah, you have to have a license in Texas and in many other states. Not every
right.
state is required, but so I went to school, got my license, and I have since been staying busier than I like. Sometime I still have a day job, so it keeps me busy, but I really enjoy it. I do estates. I do antique auctions. I'll do contract auctions. I do radio auctions primarily. That's probably more of a focus, just because of the knowledge I have of what a set is and what it should
right.
bring. So it keeps me busy. I've got a very large one coming in February on the 24th and 25th. And it's going to be all 500 to 600 radios. It'll be a 2-day auction.
Very good.
And it's mostly stuff that's the collector of this stuff was not a member of any of the radio clubs, and it's all basically unrestored. And he's donating it to a local children's home.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. So it's going to be a really good auction.
Well, that's nice too, and it it's nice to know that there are people in the auction end of the business too. It's not purely monetary. It's not like you're a hired gun, so to speak. You show up and you could be selling radios, you could be selling cars, you could be selling furniture. You know, one week it's one thing, but somebody who's in the hobby and has an appreciation for what they're actually selling is very nice to hear too, because you bring a level of knowledge to what you're selling. It's not just like it is so much in retail world today. It's just a sale. Does anybody really know anything about it? It's $350, but I couldn't tell you much more than where you plug the thing in and where the off switch is. That's about all you get now at retail. So that's great.
Yeah, and that's what I like to think I bring to the auction business from a collector standpoint. I'm familiar with the product, and I want to make sure that benefits both the seller as well as the buyer.
Right. That's funny, because there's one thing up in New England that we don't have an awful lot of, and I often wonder why that is. There is an auction house down in Connecticut. I think it's either Nest Egg Auctions, and they've started to get into having a radio auction, but you don't see an awful lot of them up here. I see an awful lot out in the Midwest. I see an awful lot out in Ohio where, Estes is very active, but they'd go anywhere if there's a big, cache of radios to sell. But, I've never been to one, and it's something that's always kind of interested me as a way to add to your collection. And, too bad we don't have more up our way. One other thing I was going to ask you, we always like to have a good story about a radio find. What was maybe your best find or your most highly sought-after set that you found in sort of an off-the-wall place or a different place? Do you have anything that kind of jumped out at you when you least likely expected it that you really were happy with as a collector?
I'll tell you a story that some of my friends call it 70s stories, because these things happened, basically in that mid to late 70s and early 80s time frame. But my wife and I used to, before kids, one of those BK things,
we used to
do a lot of traveling and in search of radios. And I had a van, so we would just take off and drive when we had some spare time. And we hit a little flea market up in southern Missouri, and one of the guys there was selling some electrical components. So I chatted with him, and I said something about old radios, and he mentioned that, he knew somebody that had some old radios, and so I got a name and a contact number, and it worked out. We went out to this older gentleman's location, and he was elderly, for sure. And there were chickens running around everywhere, and, you know, and he had this building. He said, well, yeah, come on in. So we went into his this building that was a little small two-story building, and we were walking. I'm not joking. We were walking on what I would have drooled to be carrying out to my van. We were just stepping all over it. It was just old radio stuff. I picked up out of that not one but two National Electrical Supply Company Nesco CGR5 radios. These are one tube radios on the order of a SE1420, the early 20 vintage type of radios that were right after World War One.
Oh, that's great.
And these were just, and they were just in incredibly great shape. I've since traded one of them off, but I still have one of the original ones. And we were just stepping all over the stuff, and you know, and so it was an interesting find for me. I picked up a lot of neat stuff, but unfortunately, other people, not collectors, had been stepping on the same stuff. So a lot of it was already damaged beyond repair. But you knew what when you were crunching something, it was a piece of history going down the drain.
Now, did he share with you how he accumulated all this stuff, or?
Yeah, he was an engineer in an Oklahoma radio station back in the 20s. I've got some of his paperwork and literature, and it was just a the gentleman as many of the folks in that time frame was a real craftsman, and he made a lot of his own stuff, and it was it was interesting to talk to him. I spent hours at his location. And it was a good time. I had to brush off the chickens every once in a while because they, like I said, they were everywhere. But
as long as they weren't in on the chassis, though, you know, leaving their stuff.
Yeah, fortunately, they were the radios I got were on the upstairs side of that
very good
building.
Very good. Well, that's a great story. You know, it's interesting too because a lot of times you'll run into an old timer. I met this fellow via the internet, and he was down in Bessemer, Alabama, and he was a sweet, sweet guy. And I was looking at something he had. I liked this RCA he had, and you know, the kind of more I looked at some of the pictures he had on, I said, well, you know, a big sheet of asbestos in it, and it lost its luster. So I said, you know what, I think, John, I'm gonna pass on that. So he comes back and he goes, oh, well, did you like RCA though? And I said, yeah, I do. I have kind of a thing for RCA. So he says, well, let me show you a couple of others you might want. So he sends me some pictures. And, you know, he shows me this beautiful 1938, very deco cabinet. The cabinet is about as nice as you're going to find, all original. He says, how about this, RCA? I'll just charge you the same as I was for that other one you were interested in. And, you know, he's an older guy, and I think he was really trying to find homes for this stuff because he knew his kids weren't going to take it. And if at least it was in the hands of another collector, somebody who might take care of it for him. But, you know, you do meet some real gentlemen. Which is another reason I like this hobby so much. I've very, very rare is the occasion I've met somebody that I wouldn't characterize as friendly and pretty straightforward. I haven't had a lot of people try to pull stuff on me. So, you know, maybe I'm lucky or maybe I'm just too scary looking.
No, you know,
I have a face for radio, you know.
I'm tickled to hear that you're finding that same character of a collector, a radio collector, that I am here. And that's not just unique to the southwest part. It's sounds like it's in your area. And I've been to the Chicago area and their radio club many, many times over the years. And I find that same thing. I always look forward to going because they're such nice people to deal with and the members. And they are all knowledgeable, and everybody's willing to share with you their, you know, a thought or a corrective way of doing things or a good way to restore something. That you know, I just find that in the hobby.
Yeah, it's a lot of, it's much like, you know, folklore. People like to pass it down, you know. So I'm on the younger side of 50, so I get the impression sometimes I'm the youngster at some functions I go to. But, you know, nobody ever talks down or is condescending, you know, because I don't, you know, technically I'm not a restorer. I know a little theory, but you know, it's always happy to help and happy to talk, and they're very willing to share info with you in a very friendly way. I can't say that I've ever, you know, gotten sort of the some hobbies, you know, you get into, you go to car shows especially, I've noticed this, people tend to get a little snobby. Well, what's in your collection? Well, if they don't think your collection is worthy of their attention, you know, well, I want to find somebody who's more interesting to talk to. And I've never run into that, so I'm glad that that's the way it is down in Texas, which I know is a particularly friendly state anyway. I have good memories of when I visited, and I have to say, you know, I come back to New England and I say, what a bunch of grumps.
Yeah, we like to think of it as a friendly area too.
Anyway, I'd just like to take 1 minute to remind everybody, this is Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM, and we're talking with Jim Sargent down in Texas. And Jim, I just have another question for you here before we try to wrap things up. Just a question on your restoration philosophy, because different people have different restoration philosophies. So say, for example, I gave you a set, and it wasn't something that you know, was your stock in trade, not one of your early 20s single tubers. But you get a nice set. Do you feel you need to take out every capacitor, or just the electrolytics, or do you like to leave do you try to restuff cans? What's your take? Are you a true historian, or you like to make it work and make it safe, and that's good? I mean, what's your spin?
Yeah, that's a good question, Paul. I think it actually varies by the answer would depend upon the radio, and you pointed that out. The 20s type radio, that early stuff, I would try to bring back as much as original as I could. The ones that are from the later period, maybe the 30s and the 40s and even into the 50s, I get to play with occasionally. I think my philosophy on those is that those capacitors in there, whether they're the bypass or the couplers or the electrolytics, if they aren't already bad, then they will. They're just it's just a time bomb waiting to go.
Yep.
I'd rather repair one once and have it leave my shop, and go to a happy customer, and let them play it and use it without regard of the fact that, you know, something's starting to sound a little crackly with it, or is starting to get in some distortion in it. So I would rather remove and replace those at the get-go, knowing that they're coming. So that doesn't mean that. And when I do a capacitor, you asked about stuffing. I do like to take the can electrolytics and actually and put the can on my metal lathe, cut it off, and reinsert, and then epoxy them back together, and reseal those so it looks like the original. Even on the underneath, albeit the components themselves may be a more modern component. I don't try to restuff the old capacitors, new capacitors inside of the old paper shields. I do on the Philco, where you have block capacitors, I will rebuild those and open the tar out and then stuff a new capacitor inside of those and then turn them upside down. I don't even try to reseal those, having pity on the next guy down 100 years from now that wants to do the same thing.
Well, you know, that sounds like a pretty solid philosophy, too, because I think on some of those later sets, those would be the things that people are probably most likely going to want to play a lot, and you want them to be safe, too.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's a good way to indicate that they are going to be playable, is that you've done complete restoration on it.
Well, Jim, I have to say thanks a lot, and I appreciate you being a guest. I wish you a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year filled with many good finds, and tell your friends down in Texas that we're here on they can stream us, because I doubt you pick up WRCA, even though they do put out about 17,000 watts at night, but that's not going to get down to Texas. So they can stream us on the WRCA website, and would love to have them listen.
And several of them already have let me know that they are their listeners, and so you do have listeners down in this area already. And we look forward to talking to you again. And if I ever get into the area, I'm going to take you up on coming to the station there and watching an interview.
That's right. You can look us up, and you know what we should do too is say thanks, Henry Harmony, for hooking me and Jim up. So I was glad he sent me the email.
Yeah, Henry's. Is what I call Henry my bodyguard. He's a great guy.
All right. Well, hey, you have a good night, Jim. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Great to
talk
to you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Ring-a-ling, hear them ring. Soon it will be Christmas Day. City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air there's a feeling of Christmas. Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile. And on every street corner you'll hear silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Hear them ring. Soon it will be Christmas Day. Strings of street lights, even stoplights, blink a bright red and green as the shoppers rush home with their treasures. Children laughing, people passing, meeting smile after smile. And above all this bustle you hear silver bells, silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city. Hear them ring. Soon it will be Christmas Day. Soon it will be Christmas Day.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Andy Williams. And Andy Williams is sort of a Christmas favorite of mine, probably because he was a Christmas favorite of my parents. And I can remember those Andy Williams Christmas television programs. And that seems to be something that's kind of gone by the boards, you know, a musical variety holiday-themed show. And I guess from what I hear, Andy had announced he's got cancer down at his theater because he's still doing his thing down in Branson, and he's up at about 83, 84 years old, and I certainly hope that he bounces back from that because he's a little part of that radio history. Him and his brothers, I believe, got their start in radio many, many years ago. Henry Mancini.
Our finest gifts we bring, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, to lay before the king, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum.
Little baby, and Lamb kept time, pa-rum-pa-bum-bum.
How nice is that to listen to when you come home all stressed out from running around the office trying to finish up your year-end stuff or doing your holiday shopping? Let's kind of keep that whole vein going with Mancini.
A little jazzier.
Very nicely arranged and put together there by Henry Mancini, who, as we've mentioned before, apparently auditioned to play in the Glenn Miller band when he joined the service. And Henry was told, not quite yet, you weren't quite good enough. I believe he was a piano player. And we'd be remiss if we didn't thank everybody who's listened to the program this year, and I certainly appreciate your support. I appreciate your emails, your mostly very positive comments, and I hope you enjoy the program as much as we do, putting it on for you. I hope to see you again in the new year, tuning in, and tell your friends, tell your neighbors, because this is a nice little respite from the regular world of radio. I think you'll agree. I hope you do.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Sing with the Andrews Sisters.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. What fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on Bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Snow in a one-horse open sleigh. O'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. Oh, what fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Oh, we have a lot of fun. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Well, I think Bing might have forgot a couple of the lyrics there, and I think the Andrews sister sounded a little bit surprised. I know I was the first time I heard that cut. And again, thanks for listening. If you'd like to drop us an email, tubetalk1@gmail.com. Thanks again, folks, and good night.
A member of the Beasley Broadcast Group. This is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.